This episode is brought to you by The Art of Loving for Women, an online course. Registrations are open now. Head to my website, www.nikkiar.com. This is the Secrets of Spiritual Sex podcast, expanding our experience of sex, intimacy, and relationships with tools, tips, and techniques from industry experts and real-life conversation. I am your host, Nikki Rhodes. Welcome, Ritva, to the Secrets of Spiritual Sex podcast. It is such an honor, like always, to have you on the show. Ritva is another dear friend of mine, a holistic facilitator of personal transformation, a healer, an intuitive, a phenomenal workshop facilitator, one of the best I know, who works with large groups of people and who focuses on something really interesting, which I wanted to bring into the show. She focuses on forgiveness. Now, what does forgiveness have to do with spiritual sex? Well, you're about to find out, because without a sense of forgiveness, without the ability to let go and not hold on with regret and guilt of the past, how can we fully step into our embodied full potential? Welcome, Ritva. It's so good to have you.
Oh, it's great to be here. I'm so looking forward to what we're going to talk about, because our discussions are always going a bit further than we planned.
You're absolutely right. They are.
Yeah, this is going to be fun.
Awesome. Okay, so where did it start for you? Why forgiveness? What was your life like before? What do you want to tell us? Where do we begin?
On a personal journey, forgiveness has always been without actually using the word forgiveness, it's something that's part of life, because there's always these challenges. And I came from a very dysfunctional family, dominated by alcohol. And I struggled with depression and the effects of being brought up in that environment. So I learned very early on that to stay in a place of anger, resentment, and hurt wasn't doing me any good. And in order to move forward, have any quality of life, I knew I had to learn how to let go, to forgive, so to speak. Yeah.
Super powerful.
That's life journey.
Life journey, right. I'd like to touch on that a little bit, because growing up with a family that is heavy drinkers, growing up with alcohol is like a really present, almost other person, right, within the family. Mm. It sort of exists as its own persona. Studies show that this has considerable effects, right, within the household. What was it like for you, and how pervasive was alcohol in your childhood and growing up?
My mother married my stepfather when I was four. So we moved over from Finland to Norway. So I generally got this whole new family at the age of four that I needed to adapt to. And then we moved on to England by the time I was eight. And up until that point, the alcohol wasn't too dominating, because we were surrounded by family. And by the time I was 11, the normal was to come home from school and finding a mother who was basically comatose. I sometimes had to pick her up off the floor. It was very, very traumatic for a young girl. And then to realize that that this was not going to change, even no matter what I try to do. So as a young person, you think you can fix everything. You know, you have all that fire and conviction, and you think that if you just do that one more thing, it'll make a difference. And it took me a few years to realize that was not going to happen. So there was a lot of guilt, a lot of shame, and there was also this absolute rage at being in an environment where the adults were not physically abusive, but emotionally and mentally the environment became very toxic and emotionally abusive. Yeah, so it's a I didn't realize until I was in my 20s that there was an actual persona for adult children of alcoholics. And when I saw the list of behaviors from that, I was like, oh, you mean this is just like, this is normal, you know, like the fact that I had these defenses or the way that I was behaving in certain situations were directly linked to coming from a family dominated by alcohol. And that was a huge revelation for me. Because then I actually realized it wasn't me, it was behaviors I needed to create to survive and to adapt to an environment that was very, very unhealthy.
This is interesting. I mean, you know, flicking to intimacy, what was your early experiences of witnessing intimacy and relating? I mean, from a personal level, as a child, you must have had to get used to the fact that, you know, in some ways you were not worth caring for. There must have been some sort of reinforced lack of sort of reinforced messaging regarding your needs will not be met and you will be the caregiver from a young age.
It had a much deeper effect than I realized. You know, I considered myself a strong person and I cope very well with a lot of extreme situations. And I didn't realize just how deeply affected I was from being in with a family situation which didn't know anything about intimacy or being honest or valuing each other. So the effect really was very, I was very defensive. I wouldn't let people come in. I was put on a really big persona of being strong and capable. Which obviously creates a barrier for anybody really knowing you. And then on the other hand, I always had very good friends. Like I always had one or two people that I was like soul friends. And they showed me that there could be another way. So they were like a lifeline really that showed me a different option. So I was very fortunate that way.
I always start with sort of dropping back to people's pasts and dropping back to my guests, you know, what was their framework? What was the setup like as a child, you know, attachment theory and child development psychology or child developmental psychology shows us that these are formative years, that 0 to 7 especially, where foundations are laid, where our dyadic relationship with our mom or with our father, with one significant other in particular, the modeling of that, the formation of that, how that works really forms the basis for how we interact intimately with others. And in order to highlight this further, research shows that if you know, one of the biggest indicators of whether or not your children will have a healthy and satisfying intimate life is whether or not it was demonstrated by you to them. And this is full on for all the parents out there listening. It's like, wow, man, I've got to do some work. I've got to like clean up any of my own strangeness around this area. Another real big motivation for this podcast because, you know, as you say, right, this was the basis. Can you tell us what happened after this? Like, where did the point go to?
By the time I was 16, there was a sense of so much rage and emotional pain that I was suicidal. And I needed to make a choice about whether I was going to be part of this life or I was going to opt out. And, you know, being a teenager, you don't want to be like your parents. So I decided that I was going to fight and that I was going to spend, no matter how long it took, to get what I used to say was get my head back on my shoulders. And because I was so distressed and I realized that the toxic environment was not who I was really. And that I needed to give myself that time. And really after that, I started reading books. That's when I really started reading books on psychology and the esoterics as well. The Buddhism came in quite a lot, even though I didn't know it was called Buddhism. I just read a lot about meditation and things. I've always been very connected to nature. So I've always had the sense of that there was a power and an energy that I could tap into. And on the other side as well, which is quite common with traumatized people, is that they develop another sense, like the sixth sense. Every person that I know that has any sort of clairvoyant ability, clairsentience, they have always had a pretty tough childhood, which forced them to go outside of their own selves, out of their own thinking, out of the normal expectations of society. They develop another sense, which we all have access to, but unfortunately we don't often develop it unless we have to. So I had resources available to me that said, no, go this way, go that way. You know, there is something else. I would be very guided intuitively, but I wasn't surrounded by people who told me that that was a normal thing, so I never told anybody about that. And I decided that I would travel, and I really wanted to come to this side of the world, to Australia and New Zealand. It was a real calling from the time I was a child to come to this side of the world. And because at the time, being in Europe, so I planned to go traveling, to literally find myself, to give myself a complete break away, a totally new experience. And it worked, you know. It gave me a sense of who I was outside of that environment. And it wasn't an easy choice because it meant I needed to really cut away from family. But it was the one choice that I needed to make if I was going to live a life that I wanted.
I find it just so interesting that instead of relying on the intimacy of human beings, because these proved to be really, really let you down, these proved to be ones that you could not rely on, that you actually turn to the intimacy of energetics, to the intimacy of intuition, to the intimacy of like the higher realms, the more sort of energetic realms. And that's, I'm really, really interested in that. I want to know how that was cultivated further within you, because I know you birthed really, really naturally your babies. Like, I'm probably jumping a couple of steps ahead here, but that, you know, you called on this energy to assist you in extremely powerful times that perhaps a child from a very, very tumultuous background may have really struggled to find that like inner core that's needed for these, like, you know, birthing a human three times over, or, you know, big relationships or big breakups. But that intimacy that you got with the energetics of life,
it's an interesting one, because it's more talked about nowadays, it seems, you know, so many people are into their crystals or their guides or meditation and all those kinds of things. But when I was growing up, that was just not, it was not available, and there was no Google, you know. I often say that if I'd known of Zen monasteries, you know, I would have become a nun for sure.
Wow.
You know, yeah. I would, if I knew they existed, you know. because I would stand in nature, and I would naturally be pulled into a different level of consciousness. And I didn't have the language at the time, so it was a very felt experience, and it was a very real experience. So that when I did get the language, such as saying spiritual, I didn't even have that word, being spiritual. For me, it was a very real, palpable, tangible thing. The energy of what is around me is something I can tap into at any time. And you said it beautifully, because that was definitely something I relied on more than human beings. I did not trust human beings. So it was an interesting time.
You fell in love, right? This is the next time because you know, the story doesn't end there with her sort of making love to fairies and in gardens and all that. Although that will be fun. Let's do an episode on that one time. You know, you fell in love with the beautiful man and had three beautiful babies. And
that's true.
Yeah. And he sort of came into your life. What role did forgiveness play? Because I want to bring that in. What role did forgiveness play with the marriage and with the breakup here?
The breakup of the marriage?
Right.
Do you mean? Yeah. So the forgiveness part of it really came into that I needed to accept my own history before I even met this person. And my focus is very much on the fact that I needed to come to a place of peace in myself before I even considered becoming a mother. And I always wanted to be a mother. I always wanted to bring forward that and have that experience. Mm. So meeting this person was the stage at which I was comfortable enough with who I was and my experiences to be open to receiving a person on a very sort of passionate and very loving way. To bring that sense of family and communication and connection that I hadn't had before. And I had to really work at it because, you know, the minute I knew I was pregnant, every book on emotional health was read, you know, the continuum factor. I read the continuum factor. And it was all about the whole kind of attachment theories and everything because there was absolutely no way I was going to pass on my experiences onto my children to the best of my ability. None of us can do it completely. So the first step was really about accepting the experience of life up until that point, not resisting it and not fighting it and not denying it, so that I could be really fully present to receive somebody in a way that we could really create a family.
Because when we live with the heaviness of guilt, shame, clinging to past, unresolved actions or memories or energies, I remember you saying in a workshop, these carry a really heavy weight energetically. They cloud us. They almost invite a similar frequency to magnetize to them. So we get stuck in cycles of being where we just attract the same negative people or the same type of guy or the same situation that brought us that guilt or that regret in the first place. And there's really no way out of getting out of that stage and into sort of more higher frequencies until we digest these through the process of acceptance, right?
Yeah, integrate is a good word. Until you integrate the trauma, the sadness, the anger, until you integrate it, until it's absorbed, and then you can actually transform it. It just transmute it. It becomes something different. It becomes a source of knowledge and wisdom, or a source of strength, rather than something that holds you back.
I love this. You're like a wizard, Ripper, right within. So if you're the conductor, right? We're the wizard. If we are to take that pain or that regret, we transform it, right, through integration. It's still an energy, but we can use it. You're saying we can then use it for something else.
Yeah, I mean, there's a saying that I can't remember exactly. Words, but the whole thing of being carved, the depths to which you are carved will also dictate how high you can go, how much you can
fall. Wow.
You know, yes. so if you really think about that, the truth of that, that a shallow bowl doesn't hold much. But if you have a really deep bowl, that has a lot of wisdom and energy and resources. I mean, you know, the people that you know, for myself, every challenge was an invitation to become stronger and to, you know, to break free of something. There was an opportunity in every situation. And because I did have my internal intuition guiding me, I was very aware of each process, even as a child. And that's something that we tend to not really recognize, just how powerful it can be to take on board whatever has happened. And, you know, the whole thing is with life, you can't avoid being hurt. It's just part of life. It's just a matter of degree, you know, that you know, every single person has got something. Mm-hmm. But how you use it, you know, what do you do with it? That's the key. And I personally have found that the rage and the grief, the even when it's to the point of where it's a physical pain, it's almost like you're giving birth. Now, as a, you know, you've given birth, and it's, you know,
it's full on.
It's full on, you know. It's surrendering to that process, like giving up resistance is surrendering. And then once you surrender to it, you actually find you ride through it in a different way, and you open up to more options. And so it becomes more of like a personal evolution rather than something that is going to, you know, mark you as being dysfunctional and damaged, you know, which is how majority tend to see, you know, difficult times. And it's not, you know, like that. That's why, where forgiveness comes into it. I just do not see the pain that we go through in our lives. And I'm talking about everybody. I don't see that as being making anybody damaged at all.
I love that, Ritva. That is one of the sort of touchstones or key points of your work that set it apart, and that I think remind the women and the men who are lucky enough to work with you and to learn from you. And the listeners right now, this like deep sense of empowerment that no matter how murky or messy that past was or what you did, that you don't need to turn to sort of like a religious figure that's far away, or read a whole lot, or hit some standard in some sense. You within is the key, right?
Absolutely.
Within, you know,
I mean, you can read a book and know it intellectually, but unless you've actually felt it and you've experienced it, it's just going to be a theory. You know, the fact is, we learn through the experiences. That's where the juice is. You know, like you can read about falling in love, but until you fall in love, you've no idea what it's all about. You know,
right? Something I want to touch on is this phenomenal experience that you often talk about, which is esoteric intimacy. So this podcast has a lot of people talking about sort of the physicality of sex, and then Tantra, it acknowledges the fact that we are humans living a very physical existence, and that the body can be an exceptional pathway to pleasure and pain when fully embodied. You though like to speak about a different kind of intimacy, and I would love to share with the listeners now, perhaps we've got some listening right now who have experienced something similar.
I think people have experienced it more often than they talk about. Because when I do speak about it, I'll often hear somebody saying, oh, I've had the experience. I thought I was the only one. It comes down to the basic fact that we're more than just body. We are energetic beings. And as energetic beings, there is no space and time. And when we connect with somebody, and you don't even have to have met the person first. And that's what's interesting. It's like, but energetically, if you are connected in some way, then your energies can connect to create a sense. And that can sometimes be sexual. It can be sensual. And the first time it happened for me, was I met somebody who was very spiritual and who'd done a lot of out-of-body work and a lot of meditation, and did a lot of astral traveling and things like that. And the surprising factor for me was that I was literally sitting in my living room enjoying a TV show, and I could feel this person coming into the room, and I literally turned around to see this person, to see who it was, and I saw nothing, but I could really feel them. I could almost, and I could hear them energetically, and the next minute I knew I was being touched. And it was a physical touch, and energetically I could feel them inside of my body. And the sensations were very much the same as physical intimacy, but also more expansive, because it really engaged every part of your being, in terms of, it's not just your mind, it's not just your heart, it's not just your blood flow. It was just this huge kind of transformational kind of like energy that you were enveloped in and you surrendered to. And I often, when I've spoken to about it to friends, I used to say that it was like the sex you always wanted to have. You know, and so it'd be great, you know, the next level of that is to have a sex like that with somebody that you truly love, which is then the ultimate, is to actually be physically present and being able to and have that energetic side of it. So I've been fortunate that I've met a few beautiful people and beautiful men who have been able to do that and who have connected with me energetically, and where we've been incredibly intimate in that energetic field, and that it is sexual and sensual. I mean full body orgasm as well.
Amazing.
To that point. Yeah.
So little of our sexual.
It's great.
I'm a convert. Don't worry about that. I'm converted. So much of our sexual education ignores the energetic body. According to so many traditions, we are not just the physical, we are the spiritual, we are the emotional, we are the energetic, we are the auric. And if without these bodies being on board when we are karmically dancing with someone in the act of creation, then there can be the sense of disconnection, there can be the sense of letdown, there can be the sense of, oh, we were almost there, but not quite. Or, yeah, sure, a physical orgasm, but that multi-dimensional, transcendental orgasm, I've never experienced, people would say, because and so it's that acknowledgement of those other bodies and that opening of the mind, that different time and space conceptions or constructs definitely exist. And we've got episodes on psychedelic sex and things like that which look into that.
Yeah, and you know, the quantum mechanics of nowadays, I mean, the entanglement exists, you know, that once you're actually connected with somebody, you're always connected, your thoughts are received by people, telepathy is real, all these kinds of things, but it depends on how sensitive we are to receiving and giving. And because I have spent a lot of time being very connected to non-human energy, that meant that I was very receptive and very sensitive to energy as well. So I can feel when somebody's, you know, so when somebody's thinking of me, or I can feel their emotions. So it's a very empathic kind of experience as well.
Coincidences don't exist, right?
Oh, totally not. There is no chaos, you know.
Yeah,
like,
order. You want him to change. So stop wishing that he'd be different, right? Stop sending out messages of what he's not doing or criticizing. You want yourself to. You see yourself doing something bigger than what you're doing. But yet reinforcing the whole narrative that you're small, or that you should stop, or that you should take a lot longer, or that you should wait until you're properly ready. All of these are powerful, right, indicators of how we will end up showing up if we're not careful.
Yeah, and the whole You've got your physical sex, and which is, you know, the majority of people, it, you know, if you talk to people, the majority find it dissatisfying.
Mm.
There comes a point where they're always like, okay, was that it?
Mm.
You know, and on both sides, you know, it becomes a, something that doesn't satisfy them on a deeper level. It, you know, it satisfies the physical urge and that's it. But when you coming to that place where you can really open yourself up and open your heart and open your energy fields, it's a transformative experience. And that only comes with genuine love and trust and trust in yourself as well. And this is where the forgiveness part of it comes into as well, because you cannot accept yourself unless you forgive yourself.
Oh, wow.
You know, so, you know, how can you be fully surrendering to another person unless you trust yourself and you accept yourself as you are?
How do we begin? I know listeners right now agree with you. They say, yes, I've got it, but I get it here in my head, but where do I even begin by actually facing some of those things within?
It's not an overnight success, that's for sure. And it's an ongoing journey. The only way that I know works without fail is having a compassionate view towards yourself. I use the term committing to kindness a lot, because kindness is one of the most underestimated superpowers that we've got available. You know, you can be told you've got to love yourself.
Yeah.
Okay, but how many of us actually do? You know, we're so aware of our flaws and the mistakes we've made, and there's this inner critic that's always going on. It's very hard for us to genuinely say, I love myself, but you can be kind to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that is a very available thing and attitude that you can do on a daily basis, is to commit to being kind to yourself. Like, just, okay, give yourself a break, you know, and become aware of, okay, yeah, I messed up that time, I messed up today, I'm going to mess up tomorrow, I'm going to say the wrong thing, just but okay, accept it, you know. I'm a flawed human being. Be kind. Literally just have an attitude of kindness. That's the first step, which never
that.
Stops. Yeah, and it never stops.
I really love it. And look, before we tie up the conversation, I think we could keep going for hours. I want to ask, right, and put you on the spot. What is your secret to spiritual sex? If you were to give the listeners just one key takeaway, what would your secret
What's
to
the
spirit?
Secret to spiritual sex? Develop your own intuition, develop your sensitivity, become aware of what is around you that has no logic, has no rationale. Really go into that place where you're just allowing rather than trying to control, and meditation practices are big for that. But you don't need to be practicing meditation as such. It's about going down to the sea and walking along the beach and really being present, right? Really feeling the earth, and stop the judgment. You know, just let the thoughts carry through, so that you become aware of how things feel rather than how you think about them.
Oh, that's powerful. Become aware of how things feel. Yeah.
Yeah. Become aware of how things feel, because most of us are so cut off from our bodies as well.
Mm.
And if you think that being hurt is a normal part of life, we do cut away from our own feeling world. So get in touch with your feeling.
Mm.
That's the biggest, the biggest tip I can give. And it's an ongoing journey, obviously.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Ritva, I know that people are going to want to find out where they can find you, what you do. Could you give us any links or contact details?
I'm always available on Messenger, and my symbol is a purple heart, courage of the heart. Yes, and I've also got a Facebook page, which I'm going to be doing far more on, and there's a website that's in development as well.
Amazing. Ritva takes on a very select few people to work with each year, and also runs large sort of group facilitations at events and festivals and gatherings. So if you are lucky enough to contact her and to get in touch and book something in, you are in luck. Ritva Maria is the link, but I'll make sure there's a link that people can click on through this text of this podcast. Well, thank you so much for being online. I love my job. I get to chat to interesting, epic people about their magic and what they're bringing to this world. Thank you so much for sharing honestly and vulnerably with our listeners.
Thank you so much. I loved it, and love to you, and hello to everybody.
Yay!
Yay!
The Secrets of Spiritual Sex was brought to you out of the desire to make accessible the latest research and inspiring developments in the field of sex, intimacy, and relationships. There is so much more to sex than friction and brief peaks, and this podcast seeks to provide a pleasure-based sexual education where potential and curiosity are cultivated. Make sure you subscribe and share this episode with your lovers, your friends, and your family. I'm Nikki Rhodes, a sex and relationship coach, and you can find me on Instagram at @NikkiRhodes_, or jump onto my website for more info on courses, retreats, and one-on-one coaching sessions at www.nikkir.com.